Hey guys, welcome to episode 267 of the podcast with my guests, Alicia J. Rose and Brooke Topman. I am delighted that we were able to do a very long distance. I don't know why I'm saying that. I guess I have podcast people who are in New York. For some reason, for me being in Tucson and them being in Portland, Oregon, rather than me being in LA, feels extra long distance to me. I wouldn't call it accurate in comparison to the further away interviews I've done by phone. But at any rate, I hope everyone had a very pleasant Thanksgiving break. And I wanted to just, I'm not caught up on shout outs, but I did want to, from the email realm, thank Magda and Shannon for your wonderful, wonderful emails. And I wanted to wish Rebecca in Peoria good fortune with continuing to settle into her new digs. Please enjoy this episode, and I will talk to you guys soon.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Sounded like I was right on the money. Right on the money is just another term that I'm like, God, I'm so close to feeling like I understand exactly what that must mean, but I don't really know what that means. Like, oh, it's right on the money. Like, oh, okay, right on the money. Sure, that comes from like when people would gamble and you would put like a horse's hoof on money. Like way back in the day, you know, but then you're like, I don't really know what I'm saying. I'm just saying some term that someone came up with at some point.
Colloquialisms, right?
Colloquialisms.
They just sort of pop out of your mouth. And yeah. You don't know where they're from. I see things like that all the time. I'm like, am I representing the worst or the best part of history? Yeah. I don't even know.
Was that racist?
Yeah. Oh my God, that's a really good point. You're absolutely right. There are probably so many things that come from something that like no one remembers is just hateful and the very worst of humanity.
Yeah.
It's inevitable.
Do you guys think about that when you're doing it? Like, I feel like I overanalyze everything. And so that's just yet another thing I can check off the list of, you know, oh, what am I saying? What did I just say? Well, I'll keep my eyes peeled. You know, what could that possibly mean? That's awful.
No, you're right. And actually, I've been having this sort of dark hole moment with a line in Gusbandry.
Oh, yeah.
Well, what one is that?
I feel really bad about this one line. And I don't think I wrote it. I think Courtney wrote it. So
yeah,
it's all your
Courtney.
Fault, Courtney nice. Hameister, if she's listening to this. Well, you know, it's like when you're writing, you're just kind of, oh, that's really funny, haha. Then afterward, I'm like, I'm such an asshole. Basically, you know, recently there was this election in the South, you know, and there was one guy who won, I think it was a senator or governor or something who won, where his girlfriend had been shot on national TV while she was doing the news.
Oh, no. Yeah.
He seems like a really cool dude. He's from Appalachia. And there's a joke in episode 7 about like a sex joke about like it sounding Appalachian that they're sharing a penis, and I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Well, there you go, you know. And I was like, but you know, maybe I'm gonna justify it this way. Sometimes Jackie's an asshole, and she just is, like, you know, just like I say stupid shit, Jackie says stupid shit. Like, it's like we all say stupid shit. So maybe part of the fun is that, you know, she isn't necessarily always politically correct. Sometimes women aren't politically correct. Sometimes we are more than people bargain for.
And look, if you get the opportunity to do more, then you can totally call back. Like, you can have a full episode where you get super meta and it becomes like, you know, she wakes up in the middle of the night in a sweat and is like, did I say what I think I said? And then we flash back to that part of the episode, and then you just like get right into all of this and you get to just like slap it all down. Like, you can sort of
She could be in like a pro Appalachia, you know, kind of march where she's like, I feel bad for all my boneheaded jokes about Appalachia when I just think Appalachia's great. You've come a long way, mountain people.
That's right.
And changing Southern stereotypes.
Yeah. And like the likelihood of you're that character really having had an opinion one way or the other about Apple. I mean, that's the other thing too, right? Is that especially in the, you know, even just like, and this is obviously came up on Twitter fairly recently in the last few months or so, where, you know, I think Mel Brooks maybe complained that, you know,
things are so PC now that you can't make any kind of joke at all. And then that there was a whole sort of Twitter storm of conversation happening and a lot of people making a lot of different, equally interesting points. And so it goes to that too, where you watch, you know, you watch movies, even just from the 80s, much less the 70s. And in some cases the 90s, but like you sort of watch them going, just sort of shaking your head, cringing like, oh, humor changes. I guess humor changes. But a lot of the time it just has to do with no one was like the unintentional racism is definitely more innocent and hopefully forgivable than, you know, intentionally sort of wicked, you know. Mm-hmm. I clearly have a strong opinion about this thing and I'm very angry about it and I'm teasing and making jokes about it through my hatred versus like, oh, I didn't even, oh God, I didn't even oh shit, that it was not cool.
We're just so used to making jokes about Apple.
Well, about the South. I mean, think that there's a lot of, there are a lot of Alabama things going on.
I know, like, it's, I mean, stop giving us fodder, Alabama.
Yeah.
Quit it.
Yeah, there's that
stop,
too.
Just like, suck it up, there's Alabama.
Well, you know what's so funny is the timing of this is I just also podcasted. I've never listened to me podcast sounds like it should be past tense and then podcasted sounds like it's wrong, but it's also like a made up word. I podcast-i. Somebody who is from Little Rock, Arkansas. So this is all feels like very appropriate because she's like so much more sophisticated and sort of cosmopolitan than I and it really it would yet she totally was making jokes about, you know, like just making meth, taking meth, you know. So
she's making fun of her own kind.
Yeah.
She's like, yep, where's the South? Hey, okay, all right, well maybe they'll laugh. They'll be like, aha, that's funny. That does happen in Appalachia.
I am from Southern Oregon and I am from the meth capital of this state.
I mean,
so
yeah, I was gonna ask where you guys are both from. So that's Brooke, yeah, that I'm talking to. I should say quickly that we are remote, so we are only... But listen, we're just trusting that we're the people we say we are. I could be a totally... This could be a totally different human being altogether. It could be like a...
Who are you, Janet?
Yeah.
Who are you?
What?
Are you really Brooke Topman?
Yes, I am Janet.
I'm wearing a hat, so Alicia doesn't recognize me.
That's all it takes. Okay, Brooke, so you're from Southern Oregon, and of course, that's a... We'll just... quickly say that Oregon to many people is they just sort of swathe the entire state in the Portland of it all, right? And are like, okay, it's rainy, it's a logging town, lots of people have beards, everyone loves beer, people have good taste in comedy.
Yes.
That's like, okay, got Oregon, check, let's check that box.
That was pretty good. That was like, if that's how you're going to classify Oregon, I think we're doing all right. Except you're forgetting the legal weed, which I think is very, like, that's a distinctive feature these days.
That's true. I forget that California is not A, ahead of certain states, and B, actually behind, and I'm already so spoiled with just like how liberal it has become about weed, but you're absolutely right about the weed part of it too, but Southern Oregon, Brooke, correct me if I'm wrong, is not necessarily like there are areas of Oregon that are very hot and
very
a little less,
and very conservative,
very conservative.
Yes, I mean you get outside of Portland and Eugene, where the University of Oregon is, which is a very liberal college, and you're in the red area of the state.
It happens
until
so
you get down to Ashland, which is a big theater town in southern Oregon, right by the California border. But the majority of the state is very conservative, but the most populated areas, of course, around Portland are what makes us a blue state,
right?
Because they're very liberal,
right?
We call it the bubble. It's there's little mini bubbles all around Oregon, but
and there are so
many definitely bubbles
and so many bubbles. I mean, the California is a state of bubbles. It just happens to have more big bubbles than you know its surrounding red area. But there are so many areas of California that are crazy, crazy red. I will say quickly in terms of like checking off boxes of stereotypes that I have a dear friend from high school who did move to Ashland and did start his own indie tea company, which feels... No, let me clarify. Yerba mate.
Fancy.
Yerba mate.
Oh, well.
So that feels very like, thank you. Because now I feel like I was right about Ashland, Oregon. That feels like exactly what you should do. You should go move there and have like a little indie yerba mate company.
Well, I think Oregon as a whole is obsessed with craft anything. Like if you're good at what you do, if you make something well, you get mad respect.
Makes sense.
Where other places like LA, I grew up in LA, actually. So for me growing up there, it was all about celebrity and who's famous and who cares. Oh, you know, boy, I just didn't care. And so moving to Oregon, it was just immediately so much more interesting because people were just into the nerdiness of everything.
Yeah.
Like, you know, things have to be made really well, or like, you know, you have some guy like, you know, crafted this soap out of, you know, like shavings from a tree in the middle of the forest and, you know, organic fat harvested from the spit of salmon or something like that. Like, you know, I mean, that's like the typical, you'd be like, oh, that's the farmer's market. It's $10 a bar. It makes me smell weird, but I'm clean.
Totally.
Yeah, I get a $60 pair of crocheted cat socks.
Right.
Made out of organic yarn.
Cashmere, girl. Come on. You know, those are cashmere cat socks.
Those are artisan socks.
I get it.
It's the culture of craft.
I get it. And I fully appreciate that. And I don't think it's a coincidence that so many people from LA love going up to Portland, especially someone like me who's a transplant from, you know, almost 10 years in San Francisco, where all of that is also very pervasive. Although now it's, you know, become very, very, you know, app and tech and young millennial millionaire centric. But
it's no fun. I also came from San Francisco, LA, San Francisco, Portland. So I was searching for the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I was like, San Francisco's done. Put a fork in it. I left early in 1995. I was like, this place is over.
That's right. When I was getting there.
Yeah. I was like, this place, forget it.
Well, I too did LA, San Francisco, Portland.
Oh my God. That's
only
so funny.
I only lasted a year in San Francisco because I just couldn't afford it.
Well,
and I didn't like the wind. It was just too windy.
That's the only thing I think I would change is I would have, I mean, in terms of weather, I really love fog and I don't mind the amount that it rains, but the wind is definitely a little intense. It does get a little
Well, and the rent prices, I got to say. And it's impossible to like put roots down, you know, so it was just tough.
Well,
but it was creative at first.
How long were you?
Until it got driven out.
Alicia, how long were you there? You were there and you left in 95. How long were you there before that?
I moved there in 1988 to go to college, right out of high school. And so I went to SF State for like a minute, lived in the dorms for a minute. Within a year, I was living off Haight Street and volunteering as a DJ at KUSF.
Sounds
and I became a DJ.
Sounds right.
And then quickly got involved in the music world, started playing accordion, which is my side gig.
Nice!
And then I started booking clubs when I was just a babe at 20. And then ultimately by 21, I was booking clubs in the Mission, this one club called The Chameleon, which was quite famous at the time. And it was fun. I like cut my teeth on all this great music stuff and had a good time when I was just a little one.
Yeah, no kidding.
Barely old enough to do it, but I did it. I was just a whippersnapper.
You really did. And that makes sense because you probably left with the .com boom, right? That like weird bubble.
Right as it was coming on.
Yeah, where like, because when I moved, it was, that only lasted like a couple of years, like a year or two. And when I moved, that had just collapsed. So there were all of these, like, so rent actually wasn't that bad. I came in at a good time. And then there were all these, like, that was like the big thing then was like these skeletons of buildings that they just stopped building, or like these open lofts that had all of these, like, internet connections with just like cords that people just tore their computers out of the wall and got out of there when the .com collapse happened. Yeah. So it's funny to see it like here, you know, now it's kind of come back around again and is this real mecca for that. But when I was there, I think I interpreted that as like, oh, good, look, they've made room for the artists again, you know, and found a rent control apartment and just stayed there for, you know, the 9 years I was there. I certainly wouldn't have moved because that would have been, you know, a total waste of rent control. But it is interesting that, you sort of went from, it does feel like a natural progression to start in LA and go like, fuck this, and then check out San Francisco and go, not quite, and then make
And Portland, we're not leaving. I'm not leaving. Where are we going to go? Like,
no.
Where do you go? Where would we go? I don't even know. Like, where do we get all the snacks at the low prices?
Yeah.
And the artisan soaps and there's, I know a lot of cool cats, actual cats all over the city that I would really miss.
Yeah.
But you guys, so okay, dogs. Wait, but did, right now you guys are both in Portland, or you're
so
the Southern Oregon thing was
oh yeah, no, I
Southern Oregon to LA to SF to back to Portland.
Yeah, it was actually Oregon. Southern Oregon to U of O to Seattle to a cruise ship in Florida for 6 months.
Perfect.
To Los Angeles to San Francisco
I
to
bet
Portland.
That's a good story.
Okay, God, oh, that God. Really is. Like, we could really like Indiana Jones that with a little plane and like the line and the red dots and just show all your stops, all your ports of call.
I have had so many weird jobs.
I am going to have to ask about the cruise ship.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so I was 23. I had moved up to Seattle after college because my boyfriend from college, he was from Seattle. And I was working at a bakery and taking just random acting classes. And then we broke up and it was raining and I was drinking like boxed Gallo wine with my roommate. And we were just going, what are we doing with our lives? And her sister had worked for Royal Caribbean for years. Oop, my microphone. Sorry, there we go. And
technology.
I bet we could just, do you want to just go to Florida and work on a cruise ship?
Oh, wow. Months? So it really was like, yeah, I guess that is one of those things where if you have somebody near you who has already done it, like it might not be something that someone who has no access to that information, like, you know, just right. sort of anecdotally is not going to necessarily think to do that. But if you have somebody who's done it, it does immediately kind of become like, oh, wait, this is kind of a weird, interesting option.
Yeah. Like within a week, we had moved out of our apartment, flown. We didn't have jobs. We just walked into the Royal Caribbean offices in Miami. And we're like, hey, hire us.
Here we are.
And they put her on a ship within a week. And I had to hang out for another couple weeks, just calling their office every day. And
oh, wow.
Then I got on a different ship. She had to work the front desk where you just sit there and listen to complaints for 12 hours a day. And you wear this horrible Captain Steubing suit with nylons or white tights.
Wow. Perfect.
I got to be on the crew staff and wear shorts and a polo shirt and host singles mingles in the Chorus Line Lounge.
You were Julie from the Love Boat.
I'm so excited that you... And so were you... Because I went on a Royal Caribbean cruise as part of the JoCo cruise, which is a bunch of... younger nerds and comedians and stuff, and they only we had like a large amount of the ship booked, but the rest of the ship was all seniors, and so it was such a fun combination because the like seniors would come by and people, there are certain like costumes that people wear and stuff as part of this cruise, and they would there was this sort of wonderful like intermingling of species, like the older people kind of coming up to two young girls wearing toques or something and being like, what are you a religion? What is this? were the majority of people that you were mingling singles, were they elderly or was it younger?
No, they were younger.
That's, but to be honest, that's really disappointing.
I don't remember it being as particularly elderly. I just remember it being very Midwest.
Okay, got it.
May, December.
A lot of people coming back from the Jamaica port.
Sure.
Very, very sunburned with dreadlocks and beads in their hair.
I want to see the real
the
Love
locals
boat,
just
man.
Cleaned up.
Oh,
yeah, and it was
great.
There that
just
there was a stand up
as far as the eye can see.
Oh yeah, wearing yellow Royal Caribbean fanny packs that we give out for free.
Sure,
it's easy marks.
Alicia, have you ever been on a cruise?
I've never been on a cruise. No, I've never. No, I mean, I've been on some yachts. I will say that.
Ooh,
I've been on some speedboats. I have some good speedboat stories, but I've never been on a cruise. I kind of am okay with that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The idea of being like,
listen, I had not
pinned into a boat with all these people for like weeks. It sounds really
scary. And everybody's
scary.
Just drinking, drinking.
Yeah.
What else do you do? And
exactly.
If it was, I will say though, now that weed is out in the world and, you know, everyone's like, you know, weeded up. If there was like a weed cruise that was really constructive and cool, maybe it was all stoners or people who smoke weed, I might be into that.
What about like
buffet
situation?
Portland, it would be like Portland on water, and it would be like a bunch of crafts.
There's boats. There's like the Sternway. There's a few different boats. There's even Christmas trains and things like.
Wait, the trains are on the boats.
There's trains on the boats. No, I'll move right on from that. I've never been on a cruise. I have no intention, but it's weird because in the summer in Portland, everyone gets really excited about getting on boats because it's so beautiful here.
Yes.
So like this summer, I wound up being on two different boats with my friend Audrey. Shout out to Audrey Goldfarb and Audrey Ality, who actually on Tinder kept swiping right on guys with boats, and so she would literally get these dates, and I was like, like, you want to come on a boat tonight? I was like, whose boat? She goes, I don't know. I swiped right. I'm inviting me into his boat. He seems cool. And I was like, I guess I'll be the third wheel on your weird Tinder boat.
I think you. Yeah. I guess out, I'll like, be the person that times. Keeps you from getting murdered by it's the random guy stranger friend. Who yeah. has a boat who takes you out into yeah. open water.
It. I mean, first of all, power to her for figuring out who had the boats. I just want to say, that's kind of a brilliant way to approach Tinder in the summer. It's like, who's got sea craft?
Sure, use it, exploit it by all means.
I went up on two different boats. I'm like, I'm not even on Tinder. This is amazing. I'm like enjoying the spoils without even having to put myself in a questionable position or multiple.
That's absolutely right. That is a real gaming of the system that I totally respect and appreciate.
Yeah, you really got the good end on that. Yeah. She has to be the one that's dealing with all the awkwardness.
I know. I took myself off the internet two years ago is the best thing I ever did. I mean, I'm on the internet doing horrible
things. Internet dating.
Like internet dating, yes. Yeah. Everybody knows I'm an incessant, I'll promote husbandry like a mofoer, but I'll take myself off the internet for dating. It's too much for my brain.
Yeah.
I've said this before, but my perception of it from the outside, because I have never done it either, I've never done it, is that it's like a full-time job. Like, that's sort of how
if you want a partner.
Like, yeah, it feels like my friends who have really made the commitment to, like, I'm gonna do this. Like, I'm gonna see where this mm-hmm. goes. I feel like they're having to manage, like, their inbox and their profile picture and looking at the other things and going on the dates and texting and all this. And it really seems like, I don't know how they have time to do anything else.
It's exhausting.
It really works for some people.
I'm not doing it anymore. I have a boyfriend now.
Yeah, but so she already did you swipe right on him, or you met him in real life?
I met him in real life.
What?
Yes.
Whoa.
Cray-cray.
That is so OGOS. Okay.
And this is funny. If I had met him online, I probably wouldn't have gone out with
him. But that's what people that happens all the time, right? And vice versa. People who meet online are like, we never would have. Yeah,
you're superficial and super picky, and mm-hmm. there's nothing wrong with that. But so you just don't even try for the initial date because of all of the little things that don't line
it's
up.
It's easy to count people out.
I think that's very
but real
true.
Life is cool, man. I'm into it.
I'm into it too. I don't know how to do it any other way for all the reasons that we just listed, because I don't have a lot of faith in my own ability to this is going to be the most sort of, speaking of superficial, but if you're looking at something online let me give you an example. This is a really bad example, but for example, if you're looking for like a pair of very specific, like you're like, oh, listen, I love boots. I don't want to wear a heel. I'm too clumsy, but I like mm-hmm. a wedge. Let me see if I can find a good wedge boot. I'd like it to be X amount of. If you are scrolling through Amazon by like page 6, you hate all boots. Like, you know what I mean?
So true.
And so I also feel like I don't trust myself to make good value judgments when I'm just scrolling through, like scanning stuff, because whoever the 50th person is, good luck, because I'll just be like, first of all, I hate computers. I hate myself. I hate dating. My eyes are blood red. They're dry. They're crispy. My contact lenses have dried. They're going to flake out any moment. I can't look at this anymore. This guy stands no chance.
They become weaponized.
They become weaponized.
Weaponized contact lenses. Watch, you're like, bing.
That's
be really
convenient.
Good if you're on a Tinder date and the guy is a total douche. You're like, hey, how you doing? Bing. He like slices his neck with a fucking dry ass contact lens.
Because listen, they start soft, they get hard real fast when they dry out. Real fast. Suddenly
I'm just saying. I mean, that would be it's a good self defense. I've got this is some ideas we've got.
I got direct towards the end of my career in internet dating. I was just like, listen, this isn't going to work. So.
That's the other thing too. I bet you probably do. You can sort of become desensitized to it in maybe an efficient way.
I sit there for about a half hour to be polite, and then I'm like, okay, well, you know what? I don't think I feel any chemistry. Thank you so much for the drink. Take care and good luck out there.
Thank you for signing your boat over to me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think some of this, though, I will say, we dabbled into this a little bit for like our teaser before we made The Benefits of Gusbandry, but now I want to, this is part of, I think, this next run of episodes we're going to make to finish out season two. We'll go into that zone. Like, mm-hmm. I want to see Jackie sort of taking control of her dating life a little bit.
Yes.
And also taking some chances that sort of open up her world.
Well, do you mind kind of telling the listeners of mine who aren't familiar with Gusbandry, just give them a little snapshot?
Yeah, I like when Brooke does it because it's fun for me to watch. Oh. So let's let Brooke give you the snapshot and then I'll pipe in.
Oh, right. Well, okay. So The Benefits of Gusbandry follows in the unconventional relationship, although it's not that unconventional anymore, of a straight woman in her 40s and her gay best friend, River, Jackie and River. And, you know, Gusband is just the combination of gay husband put together, those two words. Right. A portmanteau.
Yes, sounds love fancy. Them.
Yes, I don't... Yeah.
It's classy. Go with it.
I've never heard anybody say that except for you.
Portmanteau.
yeah.
I love that word.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a relationship. They're best friends, but it's a different kind of friendship than you would have, than I've had with other female friends or other gay men. I can't speak for them, but from what I've heard, have with each other. So it's supportive and unjudgmental and unconditional. And they are both single and they're navigating the world on their own terms, but with support from each other. And it's very funny.
But it starts out where she thinks he is totally the hottest thing she's seen since sliced bread. He likes, you know, he like compliments her in all the right ways.
Sure.
And she's just like, hey, and then totally gets a massive crush on him and then finds out sort of unceremoniously in the second episode that he is gay. And she thinks she's cool. She thinks she's got the best gaydar in the town. She does not. Uh-huh. So, you know, once the reality of the situation is revealed to her and to him, you know, they sort of are confronted with a third party who finds them both attractive and they kind of start to bond immediately. And, you know, then we start to see their relationship from a more objective perspective, where we see them sort of getting into it, becoming friends, encouraging each other and taking new risks and having a fun time. Like, yep. You know, representing a relationship that I have in my life in a major way that I don't see represented anywhere.
Nice. Mm-hmm. That actually begs the question I wanted to ask you guys. So sort of thinking about this as you were talking about it, I was thinking about how, you know, more than one of my boyfriends as a younger person ended up coming out later. And and for some reason, like, that's a point of pride for me. Like, yeah, you know what? I'm a safe place for a gay man who's not out yet. And I also have great taste because we all know that many gay men are attractive, charming, talented, and wonderful.
Yes.
Let's be real.
But, you know, that was also at a time where, not to date ourselves too much, even though we've all revealed our ages in many places, including on this podcast episode. But that was just not something that, you know, people come out so much earlier now, which is so incredible and wonderful. And it doesn't mean that, you know, you can't also not know for a long time or you can't be fluid and all those kind of great things. But I was going to ask you guys, in your respective childhoods, did you have friends who were out, and did you have friends who were not and who later were, and what was that like?
Yeah, I definitely did. And being involved in theater from a very young age, I mean, nobody was out in Grants Pass, Oregon. That's for sure.
I guess that was my question. Yes. Versus someplace like LA, you know?
Right. But in Eugene, when I was at theater school at U of O, and, you know, many of my theater friends were out, some were not. And we really wanted them to, because it was very obvious. But, I've had many Gusbands, just, you know, it's being in theater for so long that I've adored, that have been closer than some of my female friends.
Sure.
And then, you know, on Facebook later on, then everybody's out.
Right.
But, you know, we're like, oh, good. Okay.
Or figuring it out.
Yeah.
And me, also similarly, I was a theater geek. I was a theater kid. Mm-hmm. And so, I was in theater from, grade school. And the first Gusband that I really, that did me a solid is represented, I think, in episode 4, where Jackie sort of flashes back to her prom experience. That's a true story. And that was really my first high school Gusband, Travis, who was, of course, I was in theater with. I think we were both in Don't Drink the Water by Woody Allen, which is not, I shouldn't, whatever. We're anti-Woody these days. But the point is,
well, you can't erase the fact that you did it, so don't worry.
But I did it, and I was in the 80s. We didn't know any better.
Oh, of course.
I played a man, if that helps you. I was like, I always got the male parts in theater because I was like 6 feet tall and young and me.
And they didn't have any boys that were...
They had boys, but they were like,
but better.
But I was better.
Oh, wow. And, I gotta say, that's really cool and interesting. Because I always got cast for the mom roles because I'm really tall. But there was never, I was never invited to play a male role.
I only went up, Miss Paul Warshauer, shout out to my high school theater teacher.
Yeah.
I auditioned mostly for the men's parts and got most of them because
awesome.
I guess I was pretty funny and I was able to do the comedy of it and be tall and play male pretty easily. I
mean, it's so funny because there's
listen to my voice. Yeah. It sounded like this in high school.
First of all, everything that you've just said is so interesting because half of it feels so feminist and so who cares? And then the other half is like, oh, wait. So guys all have to be tall? There's a weird thing happening where part of it feels very progressive and then the other part feels like, but wait, why can't a guy be short?
I they cast short guys too. I mean, it wasn't, I got the roles I got because I knew I would never get the part of the ingenue.
Right.
I just knew. I was immediately depressed every time I went out for every play ever because I would never get to play
those
the pretty girl.
Those parts are the most boring.
I know, but in your mind, you're like, that's the part to get. Yeah.
Societally, that's what you're supposed to crave.
You have the most stage screen time as that part.
But it's not necessarily the most fun. I like playing the weird detective or the character role. And so I would do that.
Yeah.
And
I would much rather have a smaller role that's more interesting.
Absolutely.
Well, I did that. So that was Travis, my first husband. And since then I've had many, and I have in fact dated at least two, maybe three guys, that ultimately I found out were gay.
Yeah.
And became good friends. One specific one that was the longest one, that was while I was in San Francisco. And I had an interesting time in San Francisco. Not only did I date at least one gay man, but I also worked in gay porn.
Right on.
Wait, I did not know that.
You didn't know I worked in gay porn?
No.
I was the office manager for a gay male production company called Titan Productions, where we made River Patrol 1 and River Patrol 2. You can look them up. They're probably still out. They probably stream them on X-Hamster or some creepy porn site. I shouldn't know any of this. I'm a woman.
I love that the plot of River,
just peeling
River,
back the onion.
Yeah, River Patrol Run, the plot, it was not resolved, and there was a high demand.
It was not resolved.
Wasn't that a movie?
There was always some offender on the side of the river who had to be dealt with.
Yeah.
Wasn't that a movie in the 90s with Bruce Willis and Sarah Jessica Parker?
Yeah, I want to say it was Striking Distance.
G-rated version. What was that?
I said I think it was called Striking Distance, and I would...
You're right.
All due respect
not
to them.
River Patrol.
All due respect to them. It would have made a really hot porn.
Yeah.
Starring the two of them.
If they had just not known any better.
Yeah.
But I think throughout my life, starting in high school, but I even feel like maybe even before that, if I think back to even junior high, but I was a pretty troubled kid in junior high. I had a lot of issues and had basically a nervous breakdown very, very young. And so by the time I got to high school, I was kind of feeling myself a little more and got involved in theater and really started to enjoy life a little bit more, though I was still in hell because I went to school with the same kids from first grade to graduation of high school.
And this is LA
which
proper,
my mom,
full on.
I went to high school where the Kardashians are now famous for going to high school, Calabasas High School.
Got it.
Tragically, it was horrible. We were not rich at all. We weren't even well off. We were living in houses in foreclosure, jumping from spot to spot to spot. My mom is probably going to listen to this. She'll be like, she's my biggest fan. But it's true. It was kind of crazy. So, it was a transient childhood. But theater always kept me grounded. And when I thought I was going to prom and got my heart broken, which you can see completely played out beautifully by Brooke transforming herself into my high school reality. She gets dumped by the one guy who asked her to prom. She's like, I'm a normal girl. This is amazing. We're going to do all this stuff. And then she gets totally dumped. And then her husband, Travis, totally says, screw that. You're not seeing Jethro Tull. Because I really that's real. I really was like, oh, I'm going to Jethro Tull. Uh-huh. I'm doing this. Forget prom. Prom sucks. Prom is for assholes. Screw it. But I was like, right before, I was like, oh, Cassidy. This guy, he was like a mathlete. And he asked me to prom and I was all psyched. He was going to get a limo and like all of the stuff that was that's in the episode was real, basically. And ultimately, you know, he dumped me and I went with Travis and we had the best time. And it really opened my eyes to like screw like the expectations of the world. Like I can have my life, my adventures, however I have them. They don't have to look like other people's. I don't, you know, very early on, I sort of saw that veil be sort of lifted away. And I was like, you know, I don't have to not participate and just be sad. I can just have even a better time by, mm-hmm. by, you know, leaning into my love of husbandry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that, I mean, that especially that time in our lives when we're so raw and vulnerable and emotional and things do mm-hmm. feel, you know, sort of life or death and to have to sort of skirt any of that in favor of like a meaningful relationship or friendship with somebody that sex isn't kind of complicating it. What a gift, you know?
It's, I mean, it really, you know, it's complicated when you try to date them. That
understood, agreed, and experienced. Yes.
Yeah, whoops. I have not experienced that.
It's, I didn't know. And that's part of the inspiration for the show is, you know, I the reason I wanted the River character to, I really, it was really important when we cast Kurt in the role. I was looking for somebody who anybody could be hot for, not necessarily just, you know, another man, but a woman, anybody would be like, that is an attractive man. Sure. I want to hang out with him. I want to be his friend. I want to be his wife. I want to be his whatever.
And who doesn't necessarily hit you in the face with mm-hmm. on first impression. You know, like the part of the first episode, she doesn't realize he's gay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he had to be a little more subtle.
Yeah.
We were looking for that.
Yeah, someone who just was just oozing charm,
yes.
and had that kind of personality you wanted to be around.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially when it's a party, like in the pilot, you know, it's Jackie's 40th birthday. She's like, what's the stupidest thing we could do on my 40th birthday? Oh, you'll do coke off my tits. Well, that was based on a real 40th birthday where I did such a stupid thing. It was so dumb. But at the same time, we're like, that's what we do. We're 40. Right. Like, you know, I mean, how was your 40th birthday, Janet?
My what now?
Your 40th birthday.
To be honest with you, I don't think I did anything at all. But it
probably
was
because I don't think I did.
Yeah,
either.
It was because I was
what
working.
Was I doing?
You were trying to pretend you weren't 40.
That's what
let's
I was doing.
Just do yeah. coke she like nailed we're 25.
Right. Yeah.
It was so dumb.
Yeah.
No, well, we had the whole party.
Sounds great.
It was at an old funeral home, if that makes it any better.
That does actually
sure,
make it
why
better.
Not?
That actually
made it ironic.
Yeah.
Well, we pulled that. Those details came from that. Really, the show came from sort of, you know, the beginning of that phase in my life, turning 40, being like, okay, I'm not married. I don't have kids. I don't even know if I want those things. But I feel like I've sort of gone through the ringer. I had been an unlikely it girl over in all these weird jobs, booking nightclubs and kind of helping create all this stuff in Portland. And then I was just like, who am I now? This is so different. And, you know, I suffered a very, very serious set of professional setbacks after being part of one of those venues. And after all of this drama, some of it even public in Portland, my husband Lake was like, he's also my attorney and helped get me out of that, which is amazing. He then decided to sort of, you know, cheer me up because I was so depressed by taking me to New Orleans on an art vacation where he like bought me a bunch of film and even paid for processing
nice.
And found this wonderful place for us to stay that was a friend of his like beautiful old New Orleans home. I mean, it really was amazing. And after even after that point, this is probably 2012, you know, our relationship just flourished and flourished and flourished and we're, you know, best of friends. And I think when it came to figuring out what I wanted to do what I wanted to do as a filmmaker, how I wanted to define myself, how I wanted to get on the board, so to speak. This is, you know, these days nobody really hands you anything. You kind of just figure it out yourself. It was that relationship that really, you know, rose to the top because I think it was the kind of the easiest slice I could pull out of my life that had the most love and the most humor without getting, you know, too deep. It's a web series that I could only get so deep.
Right.
And, you know, And when you look into what exists in the world, like there just was not that much representation of that particular relationship. And yet it's to me, you know, one of the most important relationships in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, that's what. Oh, go ahead.
A more honest Will and Grace, I believe, was the
Entertainment Weekly said that.
Entertainment
Ooh,
Weekly. So
not bad. That blew our minds. Not bad. Yeah.
I appreciated that.
It's like Will and Grace with cussing.
perfect.
And some slight nudity.
Which is what everybody's been wanting anyway. And Brooke, what about your, so I got a kind of a good snapshot of Alicia's high school. All you needed to say was that it was in Calabasas and it's where the Kardashians went.
But I was a weirdo. I'm like,
no,
weirdo,
totally.
I'm a weirdo,
I mean, listen, you
kid.
I saw it vividly. I certainly saw it as you not fitting in there, and it broke my heart in the best way. Brooke, what about you? What was your high school like? And was that, you were still in Oregon then?
I was, yep. I was in Oregon. It was kind of the opposite of that. I was, yeah, I guess you'd say I was popular. I was on our dance team. I was captain of that.
Yes, of course she was.
Student government and in a traveling teen theater troupe. And damn. I was homecoming queen.
What?
And
I love that you guys didn't know this. This is making
bursting.
I'm very smug. This is the place. This is our little.
We're learning some shit here.
Yeah. I was Oregon's junior miss, so I had to travel around the state of Oregon, and I had to go to Alabama for the national pageant. And
day, wow,
yeah. So you know, I was very upset towards the end of my. I quit the dance team because my dance instructor told me I could not do as many plays as I wanted to, being the captain of the dance team. And I said, screw that. Theater's more important. And I did not like how the guys in the drama department were being treated in my high school because it was very redneck. And by the end of my school year, I had just stopped social. I did not go out for lunch with any friends except for my girlfriend, Megan. We would just go home and talk about our dreams of taking over the world once we got to college. And as soon as I left Grants Pass, I was just like, I'm done. And then I went to U of O and became kind of a hippie and smoked a ton of weed and would eat mushrooms and climb up trees. And the state representative junior miss stopped by my dorm room unexpectedly because I needed to make some appearances as the outgoing Oregon junior miss. And I was super high and my bong was sitting on my bedside table and I don't think she was too happy. I wasn't asked to do any more junior miss events.
You were Oregon junior miss. I had no idea. This is amazing.
Yeah. So.
Wow. But I like that you became like a weird, at the end you're like, this sucks.
Well, I identified with the artists. I mean, the popular people in my school for the most part were not nice and were just very boring. Mm. And I gravitated towards the interesting people that were creating things.
I get that.
And most of those popular people from my high school still live in Grants Pass.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that's their little place where they get to still be king of the world, I guess. Right. I don't know. But I could not wait to leave. And then my parents left Southern Oregon when I was in college. So I, you know, they're up in Portland.
Yeah, that'll really shut down a need to get back to a place. I think when everybody kind of everyone you would see is sort of moved on.
Ladies,
I left right when I was 18 as well. I was out.
I was done.
I was too.
As soon as,
I was just talking about that. Is that sort of like inherent thing that some people have and that some people don't, and I'm not saying one is better than the other, but just that some people feel called right away to not be where they are, no matter how happy or unhappy they were, honestly. And then some people, you know, feel more like this is the place I am is a place that I'm meant to be. And then some people feel like I wish I could leave, but I feel I can't, and then they never do. But I always feel I was just talking about this on the previous episode with Arden, which was that there are friends I have that we have so much in common and we were so similar back then, but they just didn't feel that they needed to leave, and they're so happy and great. And you know, I don't look on their lives and go like, oh, you stayed in Tucson. Like, not at all. They have beautiful, vibrant, wonderful lives. Truly. It's also like a neat city. So it's not, you know, a place that I, you know, feel bad for anyone being from or living, but that absolutely was not in the cards for me. There was no question that I was going to leave. And now I love coming back and visiting, but it's so funny because when it's somebody that you feel you have so much in common with, you go like, wow, I don't know whatever that switch is. It feels like it got flipped one direction in me and a different direction in this other person. And you know, and that was that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want to get into this MASH game before we totally run out of time because I'm
MASH.
Because when I've got a twofer. This is did you ever play this when you were little mansion, apartment, shack, and house? And then you would do these little categories you would break up where it'd be like, give me three types of car you would drive. Give me three.
Yes.
Okay. Alicia, did you, or is this totally a mystery to you?
I'll just roll with it. I have no idea. If it's at the thing with the hands and the yip.
You know what? That's very similar. I used to do that more, but then I moved into a full-time MASH on the podcast. That sounds like way more professional than anything about my podcast is. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to give each of you some categories, and you're just going to give me three choices off the top of your head in the categories. You may end up feeling like you wish you'd said something else. That's kind of part of the improv of it all. So I'm going to start with three for each of you. Give me three vacation home places that you would love to have a vacation home. Now, it can be someplace in the world. It can be someplace in fantasy world, like, Harry Potter or Star Wars. It could be someplace totally unrealistic, but three places if getting there weren't an issue.
Ooh. Okay. I'll say Jalapa, Mexico.
Great.
Number one, Kauai, like the North Shore. Mm-hmm. We'll say Hanalei Bay. Right. And then I would also say the Oregon coast.
Great.
So I know she's like, but I want a close vacation home, Brooke.
Okay, cool.
That I can drive to or take my quick helicopter.
You're still being pragmatic. Over. I appreciate it.
That was full Capricorn.
No, oh my God, amazing. Brooke, do you want to break out from that pattern? What do you want to do?
Well, let me see here. That got me thinking, because an Oregon vacation home.
Not such a bad idea after all. Now you're like, all right.
I'm not getting a choice around. Between three other houses I'd rather live in. I got to stay in my apartment, so I got to think of places I want to get out of and go to. I will say Paris or London. Because I'd have not been to Paris. I spent a semester studying theater in London, and it's my favorite place I've ever been. So I would love to have a beautiful place there where I could go and see great theater.
Okay, so do you want me to put Paris or London, or would you like one to be
Paris
and one to be London?
Let's put London because I haven't been to Paris.
Okay, great.
Got to have somewhere warm.
Great.
And I think I'm going to choose Hawaii as well. Great. I'm not sure what island.
Kauai is the best island.
Okay, Kauai or Maui, one of those.
Okay.
It's only Kauai.
And then I'm going to say...
Stop bullying her.
Yeah. I know, I'm terrible. Kauai! she might be like an Oahu girl. How do I know?
Yeah,
I've never been to Kauai. And then I would say, though, I do not like the Oregon coast. I was forced to spend my Christmases there because my uncle had a cabin in Florence.
Okay.
And it was always rainy and cold, and I would just trip over driftwood walking down the beach. So I'm going to say I love the river.
Great.
Oh.
So... I think I would like a beautiful home on the river, just closer up. I don't know what.
Washougal or Clack.
Yes. Or up in the Oregon City area.
Smart. That's a good one. I'm almost.
And I can have a boat. And I can have a boat with its own dock.
River Patrol 3, I should say.
And then I don't have to swipe right on Tinder.
There you go.
Guys with boats.
There you go.
And she's got the boat. Yeah, we're off Tinder.
I love it. Okay, great. Next category is, now this is a classic MASH category, so I got to include it. Three alternate universe husbands, wives, sexy times, girlfriends, one night stands. Oof. Three people. It could be, an actor. It could be like a role that person played. No, it could be a character from a book from any time period. So it could be, young Paul Newman, whatever. Three for each of you.
Well, I'm definitely going to have to say Dana Scully.
Oh, great.
I just got to start
there. I strongly support that choice.
Why not Red Shoe Diary David Duchovny as well?
Let's do it. I'm familiar.
That era specifically.
I'm very familiar.
Not the newer Californication era, David. I'm off him.
I hear you.
And then the gay man inside me says Freddie Mercury. I'm just going to stop there.
I couldn't love these choices more. No pressure. Brooke, dazzle me.
I'm going first next time. And I want to, just for the record, say you did not influence me with the Paul Newman, because if you ask my mother or anybody else close to me, you will know I've had the hots for Paul Newman, and I think he's the
most gorgeous
physical specimen that's ever been put on this planet.
I intuited it. I don't know how many times I've used Paul Newman as an example, but it's not that many. It's not like my go-to.
I literally would have had sex with him all the way into his 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, did you see him in that movie with Bruce Willis?
Yeah.
Nobody's Fool?
Yeah,
I was like, you're still hot.
Yeah, he is. He is.
He kept his hair and he never got fat.
No.
And those are the two keys for longevity.
And also all of the snacks.
And he kept
the twinkle in his eye.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say Paul Newman from The Long Hot Summer.
Great.
That beautiful era. I'm going to say Tom Hanks.
Great.
From Turner and Hooch. Oh, yeah, that's God. Just throw that one at you.
Great. Oh.
Tom Hanks is kind of my dream man.
Wow.
And
Wow.
Because I love his personality.
Buddies.
He makes me fun. Oh, he's so funny. And then I am going to say, who was my third? It was Paul Newman. Tom Hanks. Oh, and Tim Gunn.
Oh, God.
Tim Gunn.
He is my ultimate husband.
He is.
Couldn't
he's amazing
agree
husband.
More. I could talk. Listen, I should. Maybe we need to start a side podcast that's just about Tim Gunn because
yes,
I could talk about. Like, I just want to have. I have to stop myself. We don't have time for us to talk about the perfection that is Tim Gunn.
Yeah, I just want to have a Manhattan apartment with him.
Oh, my God.
And we live together and we go see shows.
You go see shows, shenanigans, you cook dinner.
I look fabulous whenever I'm with him because he styles me.
Yeah, he stops you from making mistakes in your wardrobe constantly.
I love him.
I'm on board for this 1,000% plus. Okay, love it. Thank you for bringing up all these wonderful people that I love that I'm now thinking about how great they are. Okay, next.
Yeah.
This one I got to include because it's a perennial favorite of mine. I got to make sure I include it. I am excited to hear your answers. Brooke, I welcome you to go first. In this alternate MASH universe that we're creating, you can have this is like foods, drinks, substances, anything that in our reality is bad to have in excess for whatever reason, be it that you have an allergy, be it that it would give you a heart attack, be it that, you know, whatever. In this alternate universe, you can have as much of it as you want, and it's actually good for you.
Shit.
Hit me.
And maybe the downside of it doesn't exist.
Exactly right. There's zero downside. Zero downside.
Oh my God, you just opened a Pandora's box.
Yeah.
Oh God. Probably pepperoni pizza.
Great. Great, great, great.
Because no animals were killed to make that.
Agreed.
Or harmed. in my alternate universe, Jenny. Cocaine.
Great.
Lots of cocaine.
Great. That's
because
what this is for.
That whole downside where you
Get
just want to kill
Get
yourself goes away. It's like you just do a bunch of it and have tons of fun and then fall right asleep and wake up feeling great. And then I think things you can consume, do. Oh, God, it's so open. Wearing sweats, like in my reality, they are the hot, this comfortable, leisure. Warm clothing is the most fashionable, hottest outfit on the planet.
In your alternate universe?
Just like a Dansko clogs and a pair of warm sweats, and you could walk the catwalk.
Mm.
Oh, my feet would never hurt.
Dude, they'd never hurt.
I could eat as much as I want, and my waistband never pinches.
Ah.
Yeah, cocaine, sweats and clogs, and lots of pepperoni pizza. Welcome to Brooke's world. Party's on, and we're comfortable.
Listen, now you know what it feels like to go second. Alicia, I wish you the very best of luck.
Oh my God, my answers won't be nearly as good because Brooke, I like wanted my whole lifestyle reality has shifted.
on its axis. Amazing. Well, what do you think?
Well,
three.
Okay, so I have to choose. Will you repeat the question so I can just have a full, I'm going to take a second
to fully
understand.
So in this universe that we're creating here, things that are maybe not great for you in excess in real life are all yours here. So for example, I actually am one of those awful people who can't control the fact that she is allergic to gluten. So in my reality, I'm just eating breadsticks all the time in this alternate universe, but it could also be, unlimited tequila. It could be, just like sugary snacks, like anything like that, that you would want to have at the snap of your fingers in perpetuity. And there's zero negative ramifications, only positive.
Okay, well, yes. there's I know exactly where I'm beginning with this, because I have an allergy that is problematic.
Yes, indeed.
In my happiness.
Hit me.
In my functionality, I found ways around it. I'm allergic to caffeine. It is a cruelty.
Oh, I know a thing. I know it's a thing.
It's a thing, and it is a sad thing. It makes me very sick to even have a little bit. And so in my alternate reality, I would drink the fuck out of some goddamn coffee all the fucking time. Yeah. I would have coffee. I would work at a Starbucks. I'd be so into it.
Don't go that far.
I wouldn't work there. But I troll Starbucks all the time. In fact, fuck Starbucks.
No, we got...
I open my own coffee cart.
Yeah, you do.
I'm so into coffee that I fuck coffee cart. I have my own coffee empire.
That's right.
We're going to call it Puffy's Sips.
Okay.
Puffy's.
And it's weed and coffee at the same time. It's weed coffee.
Sips. I'm really
selling
excited
weed
about
coffee.
This. You know what?
In my world, weed coffee.
Listen, hold on, because that just became the final category. So I know that coffee is the thing you get, but the final category is going to be alternate universe businesses or careers. So Puffy Sips. Because I don't want to
Puffy
forget.
Sips goes into that category. Just for the next one.
Yeah. So definitely coffee. Great.
Coffee or caffeine of any kind.
Caffeine, great.
I also have a dairy allergy. So then I would also say, as much like, creme brulee style ice cream or custard as I could pot. Like I would almost like take a bath in like a creme brulee or like a ribboned caramel situation.
I'm into it. I love
it. That would be pretty sweet, because caramel is also made with milk, so like just dripping.
Great.
And then of course, I mean, this is already kind of my life, but I would love truckloads of weed delivered constantly in all forms.
Great.
I mean, I sort of have that, but not truckloads. It's more like, carloads.
With no expense.
Well, not even carloads. More like purse
loads.
This
is all free.
I feel kind of bad because 2/3 of my reality is your dream. As I eat dairy and drink coffee.
Right. So you have so many things I don't have.
I have a place of privilege that
you
I didn't
do.
Even know.
That's
with
right.
you.
It's a beautiful That's thing. Right. You should eat and enjoy all the dairy and all the coffee.
Yeah.
And
savor
I will smoke
it for the
all
rest
of the
us.
Weed.
That's right. Okay.
But I use weed for those things that you use coffee and dairy for.
Oh, there you go. True. Okay. So so we've teased out our final category. I already know, Alicia, that you have a coffee cart and weed combo called Puffy Sips, which is just wonderful.
Puffy Sips.
Let's Puffy do a sips. Back and forth. Brooke, let's go to you for your first one. Yeah, I'm shaking it up. I'm going to you, then I'm gonna go back to Alicia.
She's working.
You've been warned. That gives you each a little bit of time to think. So this is alternate universe careers. You open a store, you have a cafe, you're an opera singer, you are a politician, anything like that. And it's, again, only the upsides.
Okay. So this isn't gonna seem too alternate, but this is my dream. It's been my dream since I was 5. If you go through my yearly scrapbook my mother made me do every year, fill out. It was, when I grew up, I want to be, and it was always an actress, an actor. Some years it was an actor, roller skater. Some years it was dancer, actor, clown. But my dream would just... All I've ever really wanted to do is just act and make a comfortable living. Hmm. It's still not a reality. I just opened a theater 6 months ago, a comedy-based theater here in Portland, where we teach, it's a training ground. We teach improv, sketch. We have stand-up nights. We do theater devised to create works that we do. And so my job now is a theater owner and an actor. That's what I do professionally, but I'm eking out a living. So if I could just do that... And buy a home.
Mm-hmm. Understood, and man. Understood.
That's like my alternate reality.
Okay. Listen, that's number one with a bullet. We've got it. I love it. Alicia, what about number two for
well,
you?
Well, all right. I'll take that and I'm going to build on it. I would like to have a television empire a la Shonda Rhimes or Jenji Cohen. That's my dream business, is to be able to create shows like I Take Poops. That would be amazing. And I have a bunch I'd like to make that are in the kitty, so to speak. But it's like, it would be nice to have Gusbandry be sustainable and grow. And,
absolutely.
So there's all these things. It's complicated. We're very, very indie, very low budget. But I have big dreams and big ambitions for far beyond my, current situation. But I think at the end of the day, maybe ideas are the slippery slope to those.
A positive slippery slope.
I don't know. So that's my second.
A positive slippery slope. I love
media
it.
Media empire.
Brooke, what about you? I got it. I got it. Brooke, what's your second? And I also want to say you do have the option. I'm going to open it up to just totally unrealistic, mm-hmm. unreasonable, like superhero shit too, if you want.
Ooh. I think I would just have a sanctuary with baby animals.
Oh.
Oh.
That I would take care of.
Wonderful.
And not that I don't love adult animals. But
hey, this is your MASH game. I love it.
Yeah,
love
this is a game. This is just fantasy.
Revel.
But they're always babies.
What happens when they age out? It's forever. Like Logan's Run for pets. It's so depressing.
They never age out. These are ageless.
It's little baby pandas and tiger cubs and giraffes and elephants. God.
And they're pygmies.
This is genius. Horses. This is idea is genius.
And I just play with them and feed them and cuddle them. Yeah.
So then nobody else is allowed. Yeah, it's just you.
That's great.
No, I'd have friends.
Okay.
That we'd hang out to.
It's open. It's open to some others. Wow. Got it.
Yeah.
And Alicia, what about your third and final?
Well, okay. So this is not. It's. I'm just copying you, kind of. As she's in it, she's like, "That's why I go first, bitch." No, but I have always thought about doing this. You know, I think it would be really great to open up sort of a therapeutic practice where one can. Excessively, aggressively, comfortably, always nestle in every way possible, kitten or cat belly. So,
More specific.
Yeah, more. It's about kitten belly. You know, it's about sort of, you know, getting your face. I would call it meowder boat.
Like a kitten belly healing center?
Yeah, like motorboating cats. So like meowder boat, meowder boater.
Great.
Or something. I don't know.
Listen, this is the queen of portmanteau right here.
I am I'm neo-gilistic as fuck. I am. I make up words and things all the time. That's why I work with co-writers. I love working with co-writers because I will rip shit out all the time. And it is sometimes actually funny. I never write anything down. So I started to now that I've been writing more and more, which helps. But it's been great to work with co-writers because we'll get into the zone and things will just flop out. And sometimes they're funny. We make show.
Flop
yay.
Out. Nice. Okay, Brooke, what about you? What's your final one?
My final one, I think, would be...
I know, what would it be?
I think I would just redecorate people's houses.
What?
Great. I'm telling you, I could spend an hour rearranging throw pillows. I have a whole room just for throw pillows because I swap them out. Like, how many times I go into people's place and I'm like, ooh, potential. I just want to decorate.
Yeah.
And you can't, and they can't,
Brooke, you're speaking
and they
my
can't
language.
Say anything. And
so it's all you.
And I have an unlimited budget and I can just make it as awesome and kick ass as I want.
Dude, I'm next to you. Dude.
Yeah.
I'm next to you. At your
I
side.
Love it. I, it's
right
like
there.
Very creative and therapeutic for me. I just really, I'm kind of sensitive aesthetically to spaces and, you know, I like good lighting and, you know, things in place.
Yeah.
And I'm
exactly the same way.
Okay, you hear me, you feel me, girl.
Talking once again. Well, I worked as a project manager for an interior design firm, but I'm not going to bore my listeners with that because they already know that. But that is that's just a little snapshot into couldn't.
Yeah, I can spend hours. Okay, so much fun. Anyway.
Oh yeah, yeah. Brooke, since you have a stronger memory of the process of MASH, do you remember that I have to do a little spiral and then like I go, tell me when to stop, and then you go, stop, and then I do a little counting and then I sort of break down everything that you guys end up with. Does that sound
kind
familiar?
Of.
So I just have to, okay. Don't let like 3 seconds pass. It's just like it's kind of very quick. I'll just say, tell me when to stop, and then just like take a beat or two and then call out stop. Okay. Tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Perfect. Okay. I'm going to do a little calculating. While I'm doing this, why don't you ladies tell people where they can see Guzbandry?
Oh. Well, Brooke, how can folks watch The Benefits of Guzbandry Season 1 and Season 2?
Well, I think the easiest way, since most people have Amazon Prime, is just to get on Amazon your streaming service on Amazon Prime. If you're a member, you can watch it for free. Just mm-hmm. type in the word Gusbandry in the search bar and it will come right up.
Pop up.
Yep. You can also watch it on Vimeo.
Yep. It's on Vimeo On Demand and also on Seed and Spark, which is actually where we crowdfunded. But now they have a streaming cinema service. It's super cool. And, you know, important, if you do have Amazon Prime and you stream the heck out of it, please leave us a review.
Yes.
We are trolling for reviews right now.
And you can also watch several trailers and teaser trailers oh, yeah. on YouTube.
Well, and, you know, I don't, nobody knows this, but I uploaded a bunch of special secret content to the Vimeo On Demand page, all these behind the scenes videos and stuff.
Oh.
So they're just little things we did while we were filming, but, and I'm going to add more and more stuff like that. But Amazon doesn't really give you an option to do extras like that, nor does Seed and Spark. So I'm sort of sticking them on the Vimeo thing. But, yeah, or you can go to www.thebenefitsofgusbandry.com. There are links to everything there. You can just click around, like just click.
Yes, we've made it easy for you.
Followed by one final click. Fantastic. Guys, that worked out perfectly because I do have the results of your MASH game. I'm very excited to relay them to you. So first of all, I want to congratulate both of you on... Now listen, mansion, apartment, shack, house. I can't control which one you get. You did get a shack.
Oh, wait, which one of us? But we're living in a shack together?
You both did. Okay. No. You All want right. no, Brooke. Your shack is in London, which London is so expensive that probably means you have like a beautiful
a sweet
apartment.
Studio.
And Alicia, yours is on the Oregon coast. It's just like a cute cabin
it's
on the Oregon coast.
Away
you don't
with
need
the
like
tsunami.
A mansion on the coast. It's gonna be all right. It could be like one of those tree houses.
I'll get a space heater.
You're gonna be fine. First of all, you're gonna be fine because you have unlimited truckloads of
I don't need more than a shack. It's my little happy
anywhere
wee
and
shack.
Wherever. Yeah,
I'll make it into a coffee cart.
I don't
cart.
Know.
Let her finish.
Well, listen. Oh,
sorry.
I'm gonna go ahead and spoil that. You did get puffy sips, so you also did get puffy.
So
sips.
Maybe so I'm living in the shack.
You're
I'm selling coffee.
Weed.
And
You're
weed
making
out
people's
of,
lives better. Yeah, this is the Oregon dream right here.
Big on the coast.
Brooke, you on the other hand, unlimited supply of
woo.
Oh no.
Just
coking it up in
London. Coking it up in London. Not the worst thing in the world. I don't know how your relationship with Tom Hanks feeds into this, except that probably he makes sure you don't kill yourself.
Yeah, he's like my guide
also,
if I don't
no
get
there's no killing
too high.
Yourself because this is an alternate
I mean, if
universe.
I get too high.
meanwhile, over there on the Oregon coast in this sexy shack of yours is Red Shoe Diaries David Duchovny.
David, come save me from all this weed and coffee.
He's a sex addict too, you know.
That's right.
Oh, perfect. Well, he'll be happy in my
shack. You guys
shack
are never
going to
leave that house.
He's moving on to the next coffee girl.
Yep.
The next hot barista.
Listen, this is nothing but the good side. So it's just the upside.
Oh yeah, he's not a sex
addiction.
Addict when he's with you.
Right. This is what this is still
he's
Diaries
a monogamy addict.
Pre-Californication.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. You get it. And then that just leaves revealing that congratulations, Brooke, because you are able to make a sustainable living doing acting in the theater. And to me, that just feels like real life is you just started this new endeavor and this new enterprise, and it's going to build from there. So that actually feels like a totally grounded thing that's going to happen. Maybe slightly more likely than cocaine having zero negative effects on a person's body. So I feel like if you were going to get something that felt the closest to real life, that's the one to get, and you got it.
Woohoo.
So,
nice.
And ladies, that is the end of the MASH game and the end of the podcast. Aww. Thank you so much for coming on, and I welcome everybody to check out the show.
Thanks,
and I will talk to you guys next time on the podcast.
Thank you for having us, Janet. It's been great.
Yeah, you're awesome. Super
so
psyched
fun.
That you had us, so thanks for caring about Gusbandry.
Oh yeah, I hope we can meet in person sometime.
It's gonna happen. And have a fun Thanksgiving, lady.
I love it. Thanks, you too. All right, guys, I'm gonna stop recording.
Okay, and now.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.